you never heard of.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
Welcome back to Common Folk.
Let's go. Podcast for the people, by the people.
By the people, right here. We got some people with us today, too.
Yes, sir. We do.
Some guests. We're back on the guest train. It's been a little while since we've had some guests.
Yeah, does that mean we're not popular anymore, or what? What's the deal with this guest thing?
I mean, I wouldn't call it that.
I mean, it's not like I normally get the guests.
Yeah,
you guys are just not
really
pulling
popular.
Your weight.
Yeah. What is she talking about?
Yeah, what the hell?
Andy was, like, spinning his drink like he's about ready to shotgun it. Like, he had it on its side.
Well,
like, he was going to bite into it.
I think you're supposed to... Yeah, shake well. I never shake well.
Oh.
Is that green tea?
Yeah. I told you, this is the summer of tea for me.
You have been on the tea train.
Yeah, Arnold Palmer's, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Forgot about that.
Did you have some tea at Vala's? I saw your post.
Oh, isn't that something?
You spent like $500.
Yeah, like it's $50 a head now just to get in the damn place.
It's fun. Come on, the kids.
It is.
It's for the kids. Come on now.
Take them to my farm. Cut them loose. Go do it. Get out there, you know.
I don't know.
I bring them here. Just cut them loose.
Sometimes you do.
You do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You guys need to start charging.
All right.
Well, what do you got for us today, mister?
Today on the podcast, we got a couple special guests. We've got Josh and Rebecca Johnson. How you guys doing?
Thanks for having us.
Super good.
Super good.
Excited to be here.
Yeah, man. We've got some history here that I'll dig into a little bit. So first of all, you two are here because we wanted to speak about a boot company that you own and recently got involved in called Denner Boot Company in Omaha. Super storied company. Excited to get into that and let folks kind of learn about some of that history and some of the stuff that's been going on that most people don't know about. It's super interesting. We got a chance to visit it. But outside of that, even more exciting for me is just kind of reunion that Josh and I have had. We went to college together my freshman year. We were in the same fraternity.
Oh, God. They're going to do some, like, handshake,
hey,
thing.
There's certain things that you can't know about.
Okay, right? Fine. I don't want to know.
Josh was actually my big brother in the fraternity. So he was, like, my mentor. I only went there for a year. Morgan and I had a child early on.
A blessing.
That happened.
A blessing.
Yeah, a blessing.
You guys
it did.
Out.
It's
yeah.
real.
Yeah.
She is a blessing for sure.
That ended my college experience real quick. But that first year that was there was a freaking blast. And a lot of things I'll never forget. I'm very grateful for Josh and the guys there. So it's been super cool to catch up. We met with them a few weeks ago. You guys just moved. So we'll get into your history a little bit. We will. But you guys just moved back to the area how long ago?
Yeah, we got back into the Omaha area February of 24.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Feels like it's been longer almost.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, so it hasn't been very long at all.
No, not at all. I just want to say, I guess part of like tradition or whatever, but you buy the little brother buys the big brother the paddle.
That's right.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
And that thing has traveled with me throughout my entire Marine Corps career and all the way back here.
Wait, you have the paddle?
Oh, I absolutely still have that.
Yeah. Oh, does that mean you can still beat him with it?
You sure?
That was earlier.
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
I've only got a couple of scars from that.
Oh, my God. Okay.
That would have been like when the movie Dazed and Confused was really popular and the seniors would always paddle the freshmen.
Yeah.
I remember... We were eighth graders going on to our freshman year, and all the seniors, would-be seniors, they're making their paddles during shop.
Uh-oh.
We were taking, like, drafting class, so we could, like, look out and see them making the paddles.
Oh, boy, you had to watch it.
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did. Yeah.
No, that's great, man. I totally forgot about that. I'll have to look at that.
Josh has not.
I'll send you the picture just to make sure that
please.
Is that Ben?
Is that Ben? You're going to...
Yeah. I want to remember.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
Fraternity days, everyone's got stories from that. It was fun. But going forward, first of all, let's talk a little bit about this company that you guys purchased and you're so heavily involved now. It's called Denner Boot Company. T- Tell me a quick little something about the history.
Just for the customer or for the audience. Yeah. But Daner.
Daner. Sorry.
Yep. Yeah. No.
Daner with a long A.
Daner.
Is it German? You know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The E's and A.
Daner.
Daner.
Okay.
Yeah. Daner. Daner mm-hmm. Boot Company. 150-year-old company. Started in Junction City, Kansas, in 1875. By the name of a man named C.C. Daner. He had come across a local cobbler. He's like, man, you do some really great work, and we should go into business together. And so they did. They kind of got their start with military officers there at Fort Riley, which is just north of Junction City, Kansas. From there, they moved over to Wichita. And then in 1930, then moved here to Omaha. They started downtown area, a couple different locations down there, and then moved to their current location on Martha Street and 42nd-ish, it kind of in a residential area. Since 1989, I think, is when we determined that that's when they moved to that building. And just the history has been incredible, and I can't wait to kind of talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, when we went there and you were driving there, I'm like, what? I mean, it's literally just houses surrounding it, and you wouldn't ever even know it's there.
Oh, I know
like,
the area. You're by Dinkers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's
and like kind of by Greek Isles, like a little bit behind. Like, it's crazy.
It's like, it's kind of a picture of like what business of yesteryear was, you know what I mean?
Okay,
we didn't have all these like
strip malls and
like big industrial parks and things like that. That didn't exist a long time ago. You know, it was these buildings like this that people built houses around. I would imagine that once upon a time, a lot of people that worked in these buildings lived in the houses around them. You know, you probably walked and biked to work and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, they were originally, like, one of the locations was down on Farnham, and they had, you know, like, the big glass front walk-in retail space, and then ended up where we are now because the, like, previous owner had kind of negotiated a contract. The Fed wanted to buy them out of the location that they were at, and they had become so, you know, dependent on and primarily doing a lot of wholesale distribution that they were like, well, we don't need the storefront, but let me negotiate all the things we do need, which included a lot more space for a factory. So it ended up being like a good trade-off that they were able to do. And essentially the Fed bought them out of that building and paid for this one for them. So at the time, the location was kind of, they were like, hey, the more space to produce, the better.
Makes sense. So real quick, too, before we get into a couple of other things, tell us about what actually gets made there. You mentioned, you know, some different government relationships and things like that that the company's been involved in. But kind of like if you could sum up quickly, and we'll get into it deeper, but what would be like, what's the main thing that you're doing there? Obviously making boots, but it's kind of a different type of.
Yeah, so our biggest customers are motorcycle enthusiasts and equestrian, and then, gosh, almost anything in between that. What was that?
Oh, I was going to say police uniform. So, like, the largest percentage, I would say, of the stuff we produce goes to police uniform, distributors or direct to, like, we make all of the Massachusetts State Police tall boots, you know, so we make those for them.
And it would be, like, not knowing the specific names and categories and stuff, but if I'm just thinking of it as just a common person that doesn't know anything about this, I would picture in my mind like an old school motorcycle cop. Something like that is what I would picture. Does that fit that?
Yeah.
Or a cop on a horse.
Yeah, and I mean, our icon, so when we recently did the logo redesign, and when we were talking about, like, what our icon was going to be, we chose the Fox Hunt boot, which is, you know, like a tall boot that you picture the equestrian boot with the little brown cuff at the top.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like the legacy item that we chose for the icon. So picturing those tall boots, equestrian and police is largely what we make. But then I guess that's where we also get into the total missed market of all the things that we also can make that just haven't been advertised.
Yeah, exactly. And we've got some examples of boots that we wanted to just bring in to just show like the the possibilities are really everything under the sun as far as what these incredibly talented craftsmen and women can do at the company. I've done numbers of times where I'm searching online and I, you know, see a certain style or whatever and show them like, can you do something like this? And like, yeah, of course we can. So it's just absolutely just incredible the talent that we have that have stayed there at Dehner, even through the transition when we took official ownership. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and I think it's also important, so for people who haven't seen it, to note that like our primary material, everything is leather.
Yeah.
So like when we're talking boots and shoes and stuff, like everything is made from start to finish in our factory, and that the materials that people are choosing from are leather-based items.
For sure. I think, and I think that's a big part of it, exactly what you're talking about there. It's very much leather put together. It's not like a bunch of synthetics and all these other kinds of things that you typically see on, you know, modern day boots.
Super custom. Guys, when we went and toured, I mean, my mind was blown.
Yeah.
With all the...
And I want to get into those details in that process too. We'll talk about all that. Let's rewind for just a minute. And I want to talk about, because we interview a fair amount of small business owners on here and just talk about like, how do these kinds of things happen? You know, and what we say at Common Folk is that we interview, you know, some of the most regular people on the planet doing some of the most cool shit that nobody knows anything about, right? So it's that kind of thing. So I want to learn a little bit more about you guys. I want our audience to learn a little bit more about you guys and how you came up. And then eventually how you got into this. So we won't go too deep, but let's talk a little bit about whichever one of you wants to go first, where you grew up and kind of what, you know, adolescence looked like, and then, you know, up into college or the case may be, and then your careers before Dehner.
Yeah. Born and raised in Alliance, Nebraska. Obviously, a lot of the Common Folk listeners will know where that is, way out west. Mm-hmm. I knew how good I had it until you get older, and mm-hmm. then you really understand how the importance of like small town living and growing up in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you played outside, you rode your bikes around everywhere. You came home when the streetlights came on.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you had a meat on the table from a local rancher, or what mm-hmm. have you, vegetables grown in the garden or given to you by somebody. In their garden, Dorothy Lynch dressing on your salad, right?
Yes.
And just the, you know, everybody's at the Friday night football game, listen to the Husker game on the radio. I'm kind of aging myself. There, but you know, that was life. That was life in a small town in Nebraska, and I think very much so. That was also what I was trying to convince my lovely bride here to leave Tampa, where I wrapped up my career, to come back to kind of experience a little mm-hmm. bit of that. And we're certainly getting the full Nebraska experience as we returned. But
when you were growing up, did you have an idea of like what you wanted to be when you get older, like before you decided you were going to college?
I always had an affinity towards the military, but in my mind, when you graduated high school, you went to college.
Yeah.
You know, that was just something that you did. But always had that in the back of my mind that military service is, you know, absolutely essential to a strong nation. I shot off to the University of Nebraska there where we started our friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And then 9/11 happened, and I think I spent a year of just kind of soul searching, trying to figure out, mm-hmm. you know, what that meant and what it should mean for me as well. And decided to pull the trigger that I felt the importance of serving. So I looked at all the services and I thought, I can't half-ass this. I've got to do it right. So I went to the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Why do you say that? Because it's hardcore.
My dad was the exact opposite.
Oh, so he was?
I was trying to talk to an Army recruiter, and he's like, you know, the Air Force.
I just got a pinch here. I did not mean to disrespect anybody.
Oh, gosh.
Especially, no.
Especially the person here to my right that
we'll get into that. Yeah.
My lovely wife, she was Air Force, so I did not.
I'm the punching bag on the show, so just let me have it. It's all good.
That's good.
That's a well-known rivalry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I didn't. That was something that I either missed or didn't pick up on with you when we were in college my freshman year. I think, were you 1 year ahead of me? Were you sophomore or junior when I was a freshman?
Oh, boy.
I can't remember. What year did you graduate high school?
97.
Oh, so you were probably a junior then. But anyway,
yeah, I think that is right.
That I didn't pick up that military was in your sights or in your plans. I can't say that I ever really knew exactly what was in your plans. We never really talked about that, but I remember after I left school and then you had said something and hearing stories about that you decided you were going in the Marines, I was like, holy cow. Like, Josh got serious. I didn't know that was going to happen. Like, I was picturing like something like what I'm doing today, like a marketing job or something mm-hmm. like that. I think when I first met you, you were like the social chair of the fraternity or something like that. So you were putting together parties and...
Well, that's all you guys were probably talking about or doing was partying.
So, yeah.
I mean, let's be honest.
In the mentorship stuff, right?
In between keg stands.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it was very,
And beer pong.
Did you see my form?
It was very professional.
Okay, right.
We hit all the marks. We were scholars, we were leaders, we were athletes, and we were gentlemen.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Every day.
Yes. Yep.
No argument.
but yeah, when I heard that you were going to the military, I was like, wow, that's wild, man. And I was proud of you. I was proud to hear it. But I was surprised. I didn't realize that was the path that you were on.
Yeah. I mean, I think it surprised a lot of people, including my own parents, for
did
sure.
It? Just, okay. Yeah. I was going to ask how they responded.
But at the same time, I'd still say that they, and I learned, from them as well, of just the reverence for our military. So mm-hmm. While it was probably a shock at first, I they quickly got on board and, now a very proud Marine mom.
Yeah.
Even still.
Yeah.
So you you decided on that, finished college, and then what happens? How does that go?
Yeah, so I actually enlisted in the Marine Corps first, and I wanted I would say like the boots on the ground experience. And even my own recruiter was like, you don't have to go this route. You don't have to. There's the mystique of the Marine Corps where you start enlisted and then you become an officer mm-hmm. and that's called a Mustang. And I just had that idea that that's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily.
Yeah.
But that's what I ended up doing.
Okay.
And, I don't have any regrets whatsoever, but you certainly, any of the listeners out there that are considering military service, you certainly don't have to go that route.
Yeah. I remember hearing that as well, and I never had a chance to talk to you about it to find out what the true story was, but I remember people saying that, like, yeah, Josh's got his degree, and he can go in and be an officer and go do his thing, but he doesn't want to. He wants to go in like a grunt and start like all the rest of them, and I was like...
Eat some crayons.
Wow, man. That was...
There he is.
We've got a Marine on the fire department here locally. I think he just turned 30, and he gets that joke all the time, too.
I don't get it. What's the joke? Why are we eating crayons?
They're just dumb. They just
knuckle-dragging, eating crayons. Okay, okay. Yeah.
Come on. In the movie Jarhead, the whole basis of
it. I get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, that's cool. And so what happens when you do that, when you have a college degree, then you go and do that? I mean, how does that work?
Well, so then I spent 5 years four years enlisted, and then I did crossover, as we call it, crossover to the dark side, and become an officer.
Yeah.
You commission, and off you go on into your officer career.
Yeah.
And I was an intel officer for. Well, then 15 years until my retirement.
So when you're just, and I know I'm asking a lot of questions about this, but I'm curious, when you go in enlisted like that and you have a college degree, what are you giving up? Like, as opposed to just starting as an officer, I imagine pay.
Money.
Yeah. Is that?
Oh, that's it.
That's pretty much. I mean, obviously, there's the side of it that you were trying to achieve of like, I want to do all the things that all the guys I'm working with have to do. Also, I want to go in that route, which there's that mental type piece and all that that goes along with it. But outside of that, that's what it is. It's probably fairly significant difference in pay.
Yeah, there certainly is. Aside from that, though, you know, I loved my time as a mm-hmm. as an enlisted Marine, and then you know, you cross over to the dark side, and then you know, responsibilities obviously change quite a bit. But I don't have any regrets. But there's certain ways to do things, and that's. Yeah.
So as someone who was enlisted, like I didn't go to the dark side. I did 6 years of enlistment, and I will say that Josh is probably kind of underselling himself, because I saw the leaders that I had and like the officers, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of enlisted people will tell you that there's a very distinct difference between the leadership style you get from somebody who started off enlisted and who understands kind of the way that you're treated and living off of that lower paycheck and, you know, just experiencing it firsthand versus I don't know how many times I saw, you know, new lieutenants coming in and talking down to mm-hmm. and acting a certain way, and that the enlisted people are like, this guy has no idea, or this woman has no, like, they, it's just, I think that the difference, like you saying it makes no difference, or, you know, you don't have to do it that way. I think that it makes leadership a million times better.
Yeah.
And I think that there should be, and it would be great if there was a situation where it was required mm-hmm. that everybody come in through that path, because I think that you would end up with a lot stronger leaders. And I think that Josh is an excellent leader, and it's because he had that background.
Yeah. And I'm sure it, you know, something like that probably exists for recruitment considerations and needs and stuff. You know, probably if the military didn't offer that path, they probably would have a harder time in getting, you know, higher ranking people and all these kinds of things. I'm sure there's a reason for it, but that's kind of what I'm getting at with these questions. I know that you had said earlier that you don't regret it. You would have done it this way, but it's okay for anybody else to do it any other way. But basically what my next question was going to be was in regards to what you're saying there, how you thought it benefited you, what it gave you as opposed to anything else. And I think you've pretty well answered that. And that's what, you know, most folks would say. It really makes sense. And it's the same thing, you know, in the corporate world. I mean, that's not just the military.
I was thinking that too. Mm-hmm. You've always said that.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, a lot of people, and I've kind of had my career throughout the different corporate steps, and I've seen opportunities to have jobs to go do things. I've worked for people who have gone and done things that are my managers that have never done the thing that I did. And it's very hard. It's very hard. Like, yes, they're good at, you know, these different types of leadership type things and those kinds of things that they can bring to the troops, they can bring to the people in the organization. But if they haven't done it, then they haven't done it. It's really hard to relate. And there's just that thing with people too. Unfortunately, a lot of the folks that are led just cannot get over it and will not give that full level of respect to that person that's leading them if they don't think that person has done it before. And that's just kind of a reality. That's just kind of how things go with people. It's just human nature.
And you just got to go through it. You got to earn it. You know?
Yeah.
Coming from, you know, everything ties back to sports with me. And a lot of my buddies from Peru State went into coaching. Well, it's a teacher's college. And so, like, a lot of my buddies that were players wanted to be student coaches. Well, they're not going to be able to coach. Like, I'm not going to listen to my buddy mm-hmm. who's now a coach because he graduated a half semester before me. I'm like, me and you are like equals. You're not gonna holler at me and tell me to do 20 pushups. Yeah. So like, but if you would have went somewhere else and he had good credentials, right? 3-year starter, all these other things. But it's one of those things where your mindset's already there. It's like, no. You're just one of me now. But if he would have came in from somewhere else, I would have been, you know, cool with it or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just, you got to earn it. And there's no way around it.
Yep. It's tough. So you said you did that for 15 years, you were in intelligence, and you had, I'm assuming you moved around to a few different places.
Yeah. I spent a lot of my officer career out in the Pacific before it's as sexy as it is now, because, you know, our main, adversary, of course, China, mm-hmm. North Korea, So yeah, started in Okinawa. Was lucky enough to go to Hawaii, stationed there for 3 years. During that time, I went to Afghanistan with the Joint Special Operations Command. So I was super lucky to be able to get that experience.
Yeah.
At that time out in Hawaii, then met my lovely wife here. And we linked back up in Virginia when I was at it was like captain school, or we call it expeditionary warfare school. And then I took her back out with me. I don't mean it to sound like that, but
yeah, by then I was a dependent. So yeah, I went where you went.
but yeah, I was lucky enough to get stationed back out in Hawaii and got company commander time and operations officer for a battalion time as well. And then we were lucky enough to get stationed in Tampa, Florida, which was close to Becky's family. I was at Central Command there, which ironically is, well, where I was working was in the Iran department. So we spent, the 3 years of ramping up and ramping back down, ramping up, and oh, it's gonna pop off. We know it's gonna pop off, and then never did. So, I know my colleagues that are still there are probably feeling the same sort of way. Yeah. Ramp up, yeah, and then back down. But
do you? That brings to mind for me like all the things that are going on today, and as civilians, like all the things that we see, and think. And I feel like every time we turn around, like the end of the world's coming, there another war is about to break out. It's World War III. I don't know how many times in the last two or three years.
It's already started. That was the YouTube video I watched last week. Yeah. Okay. We're in the middle of World War III.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, what I'm getting at is like all that we hear, do you feel almost like numb to some of that stuff? Or do you look at some of that stuff and be like, you guys just, you don't get it. You don't understand what's going on behind the scenes.
It was certainly helpful because I had a top secret SCI clearance, so you really kind of got to see behind the green curtain. And now that I don't have that anymore, now it's kind of I feel a little bit of that, like,
yeah,
man, what really is happening? Because
yeah,
I certainly had all access in my time as an intel officer, where I could say. I'm trying to think of a certain instance, but just say like, yeah, it's not what people are hearing.
Yeah.
In the news.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But, now I'm outside.
You're one of us.
Wondering sometimes.
You're a little blind too.
Yeah. That's cool. It's a good story, man. If you had time, I'd love to, at some point have a conversation more about like your career and the military. I think folks would really, like to hear that. I know, yeah. I would like to hear it, but someday down the road.
Wait, but I want to ask something real
quick. Yeah, go ahead. Yep.
So everyone, as a civilian, you always hear, oh, they put in 20. Why didn't you put, do you get that? Like 15,
excellent question.
You're good? Or?
Yeah, no, so 20 years is when you're eligible for full retirement.
Okay.
And we had gotten to, about a year out from hitting my 20th year mark. We had just had our second little girl, and it was just that perfect time, that crossroads where should we stay in and then inevitably have to move from Tampa to our next location, start all over, potentially pin on Lieutenant Colonel, and then that opens the door for a whole bunch of other opportunities, or is this the perfect time to just go ahead and get out and then just start our next adventure?
Well, and to be clear, so he did 20.
But oh, you
it was
did?
That, yeah, five was enlisted, and you were talking 15. That was 15 years as an officer. So it ended up that he did 20.
Okay, because that's why I was like, Carl, you don't normally hear people being like, bye, at 15. Like,
gotcha, yeah. I'm sorry.
I was confused.
The misconception there. Okay. But yeah. Yep, did full 20 years and fully retired.
No, I
yep.
see. Okay.
Cool. So, throughout that, you talked about your wife and your girlfriend at the time and those kinds of things. Becky's here as well. Let's hear a little bit about how you came up. What was it like when, when you were growing up, where you were at, those kinds of things?
I grew up in a small town called Dunellen, and it's in Florida. So horse people will know Ocala, Florida, which is like we call it the horse capital of the United States. Some people say the world. So that's the area where I grew up. So also kind of that small town, very rural. I raised show pigs, you know, FFA, like that whole shebeel. So I relate to that. And that was part of the reason, like when we talked about where we wanted to end up, I was kind of like, no, I'm good. I'm good with this. Dissimilarly, I was not planning on doing the military. That was not even on my radar at all. I was very much so. I graduated high school in 2009. And at that time, it was like, same thing. You have to go to college. If you don't go to college, you are going to work at McDonald's and that's it. And you're screwed, whatever. So I did 2 years at a local community college. I guess really it was 1 year because I dual enrolled my senior year. And then by the time I was trying to make that decision about what I was going to do, whether 4 year, go to University of Florida, like what the plan was, I was presented with, here's the opportunities that the Air Force offers. You can do as much schooling as you want. I'm a huge nerd. I'm the person that, given the opportunity, if I could be a student for my entire life and be paid to go to school, I would do it in a heartbeat. So for me, I was like, well, having a scholarship and going and getting a four-year degree, that's never going to be enough. I'm going to need more. And that was when I kind of got poached by some friends. And they were like, just come talk to this recruiter because my brother has X amount of degrees and they'll pay tuition assistance and you get GI Bill and also get out of the small town, which was for me at that point, I was ready to see something else.
I was going to ask you that. Maybe you're answering it. How did the military get on your mind? Because you mentioned was that when you were in community college or?
Yeah. Okay. So when I was in the local community college in Ocala, that a friend of mine was going, he was planning on joining the Air Force. And he was like, well, do you want to come with me? I'm going to the recruiter now. Hmm. And so I kind of just dropped in with him because he was going. And then while I was there, I was like, wait, so you guys pay for school? Like as much as I want? Like if I'm in, I can keep going. And like, you know, I got the whole talk of like, yeah, also you can travel, you can go here, you get these benefits, you're going to see the world. Right.
Air Force is awesome. I'll go to bat for the Air Force.
The Air Force, so, you know.
I like the Falcons. Go Falcons.
So for me, it was kind of like, they were like, hey, just take this ASVAB and see how you do. And I mean, I scored really well because I'm a nerd. So they were like, what do you think about being a linguist? You can go in Intel. And I was just like, they were like, there's a signing bonus. And also you get money, you know, for proficiency for language. And I was like, I like money. I like school. Let's do it. And so for me, that was kind of like my way out of being in college.
I think she's awesome. I think you're awesome. That was like my dad's story too. He's like,
really?
He was a linguist.
Oh, okay.
And him and his best buddy, they're like shooting hoops on base. And one of the guys like, hey, we need more linguists. There's a signing bonus. And like, okay, well, tell us about the signing bonus.
So it's the same thing. So for me, I joined, I enlisted, I became a Chinese crypto linguist. I went to school in Monterey for, language school for a year and a half. Got stationed out in Hawaii to work the National Security Agency translating. And that was where kind of as I was separating and Josh was there in leadership, we had overlapping contacts, you know, like the people I worked with. I got in, I did my six, I got my benefits. I got a degree in Mandarin when I was in, or an associate's degree, and then I got a intelligence studies degree undergrad, and then I did undergrad afterwards, and now I still have my GI Bill. My plan was to then go to medical school, which, such is life, things that somehow I ended up getting this.
Own a boot company instead.
It was now a dying patient that I'm taking care of. No.
Doctors need boots too. You
know. So I went and I did an undergrad in neuroscience afterwards, and then I did a full post-bac for genetics and biochem because I had planned on applying to medical school. And then we had our second daughter around the time I got pregnant when I was getting ready to take my MCAT, and so decided to go ahead and delay that a little bit and thought, oh, it'll be there when I'm ready. And then as we kind of got settled in here, obviously right now, like, my friends who are in the medical community are like, it's tough, it's miserable, it's a hard time to do it. And so the idea of going and being away from my kids for 80 hours a week in some kind of intense program just no longer seemed like something that was a worthwhile trade-off. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
You still got to invest in yourself as far as building knowledge, going to school. Like, even if that's not exactly what you're using, that's kind of what everyone talks about. Yeah, I went to college for 4 years for this, but I'm actually doing that. That's a very common story.
Yeah, I learned how to learn. We do have some customers in China, so that's been fun. Like, I get to occasionally, and some of our machines come in with machine manuals that are still in Chinese. They don't send an English version, so we've been able to laugh a couple times. I was like able to dust off the old.
That is fantastic. Yeah. That's like my dad's exact same story. When we'd get fireworks, we'd always make him read them.
What language did your dad
Mandarin.
Do?
Yeah.
Man, that's so cool. Yeah.
They've got a machine that they showed us at their facility. It's the first one that you guys have had to buy as owners, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a very critical machine. We'll talk about some of those details, but it's like super unique. Like, I imagine there's how many of those do you think there is in the United States of that machine?
Of that machine? Gosh, like a handful,
right? Yeah. So because of that, the manufacturer hasn't spent a whole lot of time like translating the instruction manual or whatever, or all the warning labels and all the shit that comes along with it. Yeah. So they get it, but lucky for them, she can read it.
Like, aha!
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Which is pretty wild, like a coincidence when you think about it.
Yeah, how everything can really go full circle.
Yeah.
Definitely.
One of the things I wanted to ask you when you were talking about the military, I've met a number of folks who were linguists, but I've never had a chance to ask them about, like, how does this really work? Like, I picture, like, old war movies where, like, someone's sitting in an office somewhere and you're listening to, like, these communications and you're translating them and you're, like, figuring out the secrets that all these people are saying and all that kind of stuff. But what is it really like? Like, what do you... How does it really work?
I mean, that's not too far off.
I was going to say,
you literally just sit and listen and write it down, or you're typing,
like you're
or you translate?
Like, are you, you're intercepting?
It's not real. It's not like it's real time.
It's been recorded or whatever.
Sure.
It's literally like communications that they have that they're not realizing in many cases that someone has grabbed and is
we're looking at each other because we're like,
this is what I'm wondering too.
Could be like in a black briefcase and they're like, you know, could be like top secret.
I mean, my dad won't say a word about it. All the stories I get is from my uncle.
Whatever he had picked up from your dad along the way.
So what you're imagining could be accurate.
It sounds like it. Sounds like it without sounding like
off.
Yeah. Sources and methods. That's what it starts to come down to. Where you're like, we're still under an NDA.
Yep.
Ever go away, or like when you die, obviously, then, or what? Does that ever stop?
Something that follows you for life.
Correct. It does for life. Yep. Okay. All right. Yep. Got it. Yeah, people talk about military stuff and ranks and all this. I don't get it. Like, I don't know it. So everyone's equal to me.
Well, that's kind of one.
I love that.
That's kind of one of the beauties of this particular country is that, like, folks like us don't have to. Like, we've got the luxury of not having to do that. We've got folks that do that and do that hard work and protect us and make it create an environment where we don't have to worry about those things. You know, so that's kind of a picture of that.
Yeah, we put it on them. Is that fair?
But also what's cool about it is it's voluntary. It's a voluntary military. True. So they've asked for it.
Okay.
Like they want
true.
To do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That's another thing that's different about our setup. So pretty cool.
I loved every minute of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's many parts of me that misses, at least misses being with the Marines for sure. And obviously, you know, I'll say it again, no regrets about exiting. I think that was the perfect time. But it was an incredible career and loved every second of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys sharing that. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just say something, though, before we move too much further. Let me also just say this. Number one, Morgan, I think you deserve a thank you, at least from service member to you, for participating in the 50-mile march.
Oh, well, thank you.
For the listeners who don't know, that's a charity that goes to veteran organizations or an organization to help veterans in need. And I know firsthand You can't just go off and hike those 50 miles without putting the miles on your legs, your knees. And so that just shows the dedication that you put into doing that event, and you know, on your own time. So you know, huge thank you for,
well, gosh,
for that.
Thank you. I was not expecting that. I just always feel like I individually don't do enough, like our service members. And so if I can just do a little bit and raise money and awareness, and I have the legs and the capability, like, why not do that? Like, I will never be able to serve. It's just not in
multi-year
me,
now,
you know?
Right? You've done it twice, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I thank you for saying that. So, well, I just feel like if everyone does a little bit, it can make a huge difference.
Well, and you do. You deserve a thank you. Oh. So for that,
well,
thank you. And then, you know, too, for you guys for just doing this podcast, I've looked at, you know, been a listener and looked back at, you know, some of the folks that you've had on. You've had veteran business owners, and you've had actual service members on this podcast. And so for that, just giving a voice to us and to those folks, much appreciated for that. And three, and probably most importantly, thank you for just being who you guys are. Obviously, Ben and Morgan, I've known you guys for quite some time, that you're responsible, great, tax-paying citizens that are raising fantastic youth that are, you know, following suit and being, you know, good, responsible citizens for the community. And Andy, barely know you, but been, like I said, been a listener and listening to the things that you talk about. I know that you're exactly the same way, raising fantastic youth that are really serving this community. So again, guys, much appreciated.
Yeah, it's cool. Aww, that's cool to hear. I appreciate that. Yeah. And it makes me think, you know, why you're saying that. If I can reiterate a little bit, tell me if this is true, because we just got done talking about your guys' careers and, you know, just real briefly, obviously, kind of how you came up. And maybe what you're saying is that by what we're doing made and makes what you did worth it, because what you are doing is so that folks like us can do these kinds of things, and that we do it right to give you a reason to feel good about what you are doing, because that allowed us to do what we're doing.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that's exactly right. And to all the common folk out there that are doing the same thing, you deserve a thank you from our service member as well for making this all worth it.
Yeah, that's cool, man. No, I appreciate that for sure. I know everybody else does as well. One of the things you guys touched on, the last thing I want to talk about before we move on to the company, is you mentioned that you have children. Can you tell us just a quick little bit about that?
Yeah, we've got two little girls, 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, and yeah, they're just awesome. Bobby. Boy, if that's not a humbling experience to have two little girls, I don't know what else.
Yeah, man.
Girl dad over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He needed it.
You know, I especially on the second one, it took me a little bit to accept it, but now I just can't imagine anything different.
Yeah.
Wait, do you have brothers? So.
Nope. Two sisters.
Oh, so okay. This was Destin then. Okay, I thought maybe.
Hmm. Becky, do you have siblings?
I have one sister.
Okay. Yeah. Hmm.
Yep. So you guys done?
Yes.
Done. Okay. All right.
That was a quick one.
I had hard pregnancies.
Oh,
you know?
Me too.
So I'm
girl.
So thankful. Yeah. I'm so thankful that we have two healthy, happy little girls, and there's not enough money in the world to pay me to do it again.
Just throwing it. Maybe
it's probably too early at this point. But do you guys have any like kind of specific dreams or aspirations for them in terms of what they're going to be when they grow up? Given your guys' experience,
they won't join the Marine Corps.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No. Trying to be those parents that aren't, you know, trying to pigeonhole them into anything.
Yep.
Yeah, just happy and. For them to understand hardship and to be able to be empathetic and helpful. And I think that, you know, as long as they're happy and they can make the world around them better, like, that's all I could ever want.
Yeah.
That's tough. That's tough. You're going to have to let them fail. You have to let little girl fail. That's tough.
You do, yeah. Especially as a dad, that's tough.
I know.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
My dad let me fail a lot.
It's easier. Yeah.
It's easier with your boys.
Oh my
it's
god!
It's totally easier.
Yes.
Think about the
I
times.
I almost set Ozzy up to fail.
Yeah. Think about the times that you've brought up stuff about Joel. You're like, oh, if we don't do this or do that, this is going to happen to him, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to happen to him. It needs to happen to him because there ain't a damn thing we can do about it. Like, I can talk about it all I want, but he has got to rub his face on the concrete.
You
got to
go through it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that that's a difference between boys and girls, too, though, is that little boys and teenage boys, they have to fail themselves to learn it. But girls can watch somebody else fail and say, yeah, I don't want that to be me. And, like, I think that there's a difference to it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For real, where you have to let the boys fail. And for the girls, you have to at least let them see who they don't want to be and, like, learn from someone else's mistakes. I think that's
very true.
An easier thing, you know, with our frontal lobes developing better sooner, you know, whatever it is, that the girls seem to be a little bit more mature a little sooner.
You reminded me of a story we went out to eat a while ago. It was on one of those really good Mexican food restaurants on 24th Street in Omaha. And little kids running all over the place. It's fun. You know, it's lively. You're getting authentic food. A lot of little kids, a lot of noise. And there was this little boy. He was way shorter than all the little girls, but he had the moxie. You know, he'd walk around with his arms out like this. And he walked up to our table and just goes, roar! Like, put his arms up. I'm like, Jesus, this kid's about it. And so we kind of kept our eye on him. And he went over to where all the toys and trinkets were. And he started scaling it, started climbing it. And all the little girls, they didn't. They just sat back and watched. Like you were saying, we'll let him fall. And he was happy to do it and fall. But, you know, he wasn't going to show he was hurt. You know?
Yeah.
He was a good little boy, you know. Yeah. But all the little girls,
they just
sat back and like, yeah, you go for it, buddy. You know?
It's funny.
But for your kids and you guys growing up in smaller towns, do you want that for your kids? Obviously, coming back to Nebraska from Tampa, I would say it's just smaller in general, but not that you need to say where you live, but it's a smaller town and they're getting that.
Yeah,
the full experience out there in UTAN. We just part of the reason why we moved back in the first place was that we found a piece of property that just really checked a lot of our boxes of what we always kind of wanted. And obviously UTAN, very rural, but we know that the school district is fantastic, and they have been fantastic. And we just really wanted that experience for our kids, too.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's huge.
That was kind of interesting, too, because last time we talked to you guys, you were telling me how you moved to the UTAN area. And that was that kind of like just sight unseen?
Kind
of. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what I was picking up from you guys.
Yeah. It was, find property on Zillow, decide that what we could get for a property in rural Nebraska versus our house in Tampa was like, we can get the 5-acre little plot of land of our dreams here. And then, I don't know, basically we put an offer on the house having not seen it. I flew out after we had the offer in to come do an inspection period. So I had seen it once. And that was really
crazy.
It before we closed on it.
That's awesome.
And then I did a trip up right before closing. It happened to be January of 2024 during the polar vortex.
Of
course, you know, it was accidental that our schedules aligned that way. And my best friend, Jessica, oh my God, bless her heart. She is a Florida girl through and through. And this was our mom's weekend getaway. The dads had the kids. We loaded up my car and we were bringing our chickens because we had 5 chickens that we were bringing up from Tampa. And we road tripped absolute outrageous winter storm in my car with chickens in the car with us who were also panicked at the cold air and the snow. And so when I got to the house that we were closing on, the family that was living there was so nice and that they were like, yeah, you can leave the chickens here, fly back. And then we were doing our family trip up. So they essentially chicken sat for a couple weeks for us. And when we arrived and the snow was, you know, 5 feet high on either side of the street and I'm coming in and pulling the chickens in, this poor woman thought for sure that I was going to turn around and say, we are not leaving here. Goodbye.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So that was my big exposure to Nebraska winter. And everybody thought, well, if that didn't scare you away, I don't know what will.
Had you been to Nebraska before that?
Nope. Just for a week trip when I came up weekend. I came up to do some job interviews before the move, but that was my first introduction to winter.
Wow, you're super adventurous, or either you just really love this man, or both. I mean, like, to do that, that's amazing.
I don't know if I could do that. A special woman because, born and raised in Florida, there was one one day, sometime last winter, I think. It was a nice, gentle snow, and she came inside, having been outside for, I don't know, an hour or two, whatever it was. She's like, I think this might be my favorite weather. And I'm like, all right, well, you're in for it, because, yeah, I guess we're not moving anytime soon. But
wow.
Yeah, she enjoyed it. She enjoys the winter.
Well, it's like, yeah, I wasn't born in Florida. I was born just outside Chicago, my family. So, there's something Midwestern in the blood. It's just that we moved to Florida when I was so little. I was raised there. But, yeah, I keep telling everyone the joke is that I'm like one of those huskies that you see on the internet where people are like, you're supposed to come inside. You know, the lady on the internet says you're cold, and I would be outside all day if I didn't have responsibilities.
That's awesome. Nice.
Yeah, well, I've lived here for a long time. You definitely like it a lot more than I do. That snow, that cold weather. Oof.
That's rough. That's a joke everybody knows.
Yeah.
You don't like cold weather.
It's kind of a testament for Nebraska, though. It's a funny story that you guys moved here. You know, obviously Josh has had a lot of Nebraska experience, but just knowing that it's going to work, you know, and having that confidence in it. And it's a great state. It's a great area. There's a lot of really good people. You just kind of know it's going to work.
Yeah. Alliance can get harsh, too. You're out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, doesn't have the humidity here, so it's drier. Mm-hmm. But they tend to get a lot more snow. Yeah,
pretty windy.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I want to talk about Daner. Let's get into that. Before we do that, let's take a quick break, and then we'll dig into the company.